Let's say you've moved to a new city, but the house you've moved into has paint chipping off the walls. Who would you call for a fresh coat of paint, and how would you know that they were any good? One popular way to find out is to visit a website that crowdsources ratings of local businesses, like Yelp. You pick the painters that have the best feedback from online users, and ideally the painters do a good job to maintain their reputation. Three researchers looked at this and asked, if crowdsource rankings make businesses function well, could they make governments function better too? Welcome to Talking Ideas. I'm your host, Rabia Malik. The researchers decided to test this question in the livestock sector of Punjab Sahiwal district, where the actual performance of government veterinarians who artificially inseminate cows differs substantially from how farmers perceive their performance. Through mobile phones, the researchers let farmers give feedback on the veterinarians, and the overall performance of veterinarians was made available for farmers to use. The researchers then measured how that affected the quality of insemination and found that the likelihood of livestock getting pregnant increased by 17%, and it was thoroughly cost-effective.
Even at a very small scale, we were able to get a threefold return on investment.
That was Ali Hasnain, one of the authors of the study and an assistant professor of economics at the Lahore University of Management Sciences. He and one of his co-authors, Arman Rezai, an assistant professor at the University of California, Davis, sat down with our director, Faisal Bari, for this episode of Talking Ideas. They discussed the results of the study and what they imply for designing crowdsourced platforms for better service delivery.
So let me start by asking Ali, what with this livestock paper that we are going to talk about, what problems were you looking at from a policy point of view?
So first of all, thank you for having us. There are two problems that we were interested in. One was on looking at how to get people to show up to work. So different government departments have trouble with monitoring whether they get attendance right. And in this project, we wanted to dig deeper and look at the performance of people that do show up to work. So the problem is that in Punjab, government offices are dispersed across the province, but the managerial manpower of the government tends to be concentrated in city centers, in particular in Lahore. And so the challenge is to get information to bureaucrats to make performance evaluations. And that was really the topic of our previous work. And we wanted to build on that and look at how we can not just bring information to government officers, but to the people who are the ultimate clients of the government officials. The second problem was to look at ways to solve problems of asymmetric information. And I can elaborate more on that as we go.
Asymmetric information happens in lots of markets, right? Wherever services are being provided, probably you have asymmetric information. So what aspects were you looking in this case?
So we were looking at artificial insemination of livestock. And the way artificial insemination works is that the government has different semen production units spread across the province. They harvest semen from high-performing animals that are selected for these traits in these SPUs. The harvested semen is then frozen in semen straws and distributed all across the province to government officials, who then visit farmers when the farmer's animal is in heat to artificially inseminate the animal. Now, the problem is that once the farmer calls a government official to come and conduct the artificial insemination, whether the insemination was successful, in other words, whether the animal got pregnant or not, and the quality of the insemination, in other words, whether there was any disease that was born or the sort of the quality of the semen used, is not apparent for a few months. And therefore, at the time of insemination, the AI technician, the artificial insemination technician, knows more about these things than the farmer, for whom a lot of this information manifests further down the line.
Part of the issue here, too, is that any given farmer only has one or two or three livestock. And so even if they use the same artificial insemination technician for a couple of years, they may only get 5 or 10 or 15 observations of that artificial insemination technician doing their job. Whereas this technician is visiting many other farmers, and there's, in theory, a lot more information out there about how good of a job they're doing on average in successfully artificially inseminating a cow.
So essentially what you're doing is pooling that information about this person's visit to other farmers also, and making some sort of an index that goes to all the farmers, and therefore they can decide which person to go to.
So what we did was our intervention was smartphone-based. We gave out smartphones to all artificial insemination technicians in Sahiwal district. That's about 70 to 75 veterinary officers at a given time. These officials, when they visited farmers, brought back the phone numbers of the farmers. And then we made calls to these farmers and just asked whether the actions of the artificial inseminator were successful or not, whether the animal got pregnant or not. And then we aggregated this information across many different instances of insemination so that we were able to build success indices of each technician.
I'll add in a couple of things. One important point, I think, is when once we generated this aggregate information for each veterinarian, we gave it back to farmers all through a calling center just to make this information very precise so we could tell farmers about the veterinary officers in their area that they might reasonably call for service provision and gave them information on the top vets in their area so they could decide if they wanted to continue with their current technician or choose a new one based on average service quality.
So, Raman, what did you find once you gave this information? What were the results?
So I should say we did this as a randomized control trial. Mm-hmm. So we collected this information across the entire province, but then we only gave out the information on success rates, and average prices charged to a random selection of farmers. And then we observed differences between that random selection of farmers that got the information and those that didn't. And when we find that when we gave this information to farmers, they were subsequently much more likely to see their livestock get pregnant. About 17 percentage points on a base of around 60%. So that, you know, it raised their likelihood of their cow getting pregnant by a substantial and meaningful amount.
So in other words, if the information intervention doesn't seem very costly, right? But the phone distribution now and the 4G, 3G distribution is fairly broad in Pakistan. So with a small intervention that collates this information and gives it back to the farmer, you find that the vets are becoming more efficient as well. Their service delivery is getting better.
Exactly. And we can actually do some fairly rough but back-of-the-envelope calculations on the cost-effectiveness of this. As you mentioned, it's very cheap. We know exactly how much it costs to collect this information. We pay the bill. And we can estimate based on essentially the value of milk and calves in a little, you know, coming 1 or 2 months sooner than they might have otherwise. And we find that this intervention had more than a 300% return on the cost. And that's including paying for all of developing the technology and buying the smartphones and all of these fixed costs. So it was a very, very effective.
So in other words, because those costs will go down, so the government is already engaged in handing out smartphones to government officials. That would take away, obviously, the cost of equipping them with new phones. The sort of government hands out contracts for more connections and data plans and so on, that cost will only come down. So even at a very small scale, we were able to get a threefold return on investment, and hopefully that should increase if the government scales.
If you wanted to go, let's say, province-wide with something like this, what would be the cost of setting up the call centers, etc., how many, where, and so on?
Well, this is a question that actually gets into some areas we're taking this research, which is to think maybe about we think of this as crowdsourcing the collection of information from farmers, but then a centralized clearinghouse gave that information back to farmers through a call center. And in current work, we're actually working on crowdsourcing both ends of the platform. So essentially have farmers themselves make these phone calls for small incentives and try to lower the cost rather than having to contract with the call center. But at present, I mean, we were able to cover all of Sahiwal with the two full-time call center agents, which is fairly cheap. And, you know, firms in Lahore are pretty good at this stuff.
So now, generalizing from this particular example, if we were looking at, say, government teachers in government schools or BHUs, the basic health units, and the performance of either dispensers or doctors there, here you have a very clear case of either the animal gets pregnant or not. In the case of education and many, in health, etc., sometimes finding the right sort of variable, a yes-no variable, is very hard. So what kind of generalization can we do from this, and how do we use that this method to reduce information asymmetry in other cases?
So there are three broad cases that we've looked at of where efforts to reduce asymmetric information can go in the literature. The first one is to have higher quality supply through either a government program or an NGO or whatever. Once you flood in the market with a high quality supply, it drives poor quality but not high quality out of the market. But that impact is sort of dependent on the extent of awareness of the people that are going to consume the good that's supplied. The second one is to do like an audit where you go in. So there's research in Pakistan in the education sector where you go in and you develop a scorecard of the quality of the school. And the problem with that, so the problem with the first one is it requires a large infrastructure to go out and provide the physical good. And when you think of all of the cases or all of the markets in which this problem exists, it just becomes untenable for high quality supply to be pushed through government channels because there are issues with government failure and so on. With audits of the type that you need for a scorecard, again you need to have people who can go and conduct sort of intense evaluations of the quality of each particular place. So, as you're pointing out, it's very hard to do an evaluation of quality because in some places, because quality is exists on many dimensions. So some schools will be good in some areas but worse in other areas than other schools, and how do you compare that? That's a non-trivial problem. And the third thing is to just collect people's opinions about places. So, and that's roughly what we're doing here is trying to get at, trying to aggregate reputation. Except in our case, we were doing it, we were asking them a very specific question and trying to quantify quality. But you could go from this to a point where you are aggregating people's opinions about particular providers or their experience more generally. So have you had a good or bad experience? As long as you're aggregating it over a large number of people, you're then giving them the benefit of sort of aggregate knowledge or pooling their knowledge.
I mean, I think the education example is a really good way to think through how it would be a challenging to scale this into different sectors. I think there are some sectors where there's obviously something easy to measure. You could think about where we have a project with, I have a project with pollution where we're, you know, you can actually measure it with technology, so you don't even need to crowdsource the initial measurement, and then it's more about the getting that information out to individuals. But with education, I think two things. One, it's true it's pretty expensive in traditional using traditional means to measure education quality. Generally, people use testing for that. But even then, most of the successful interventions we've seen around giving information about education quality have relied on door-to-door visits that are very expensive, even just to disseminate that information once it's collected. So we could at least cut down on that margin. Mm-hmm. Though the other point I'll make, and I think this is important, is that you also need to be in a market where there's room to improve, and it's fairly cheap to do so, or at least the agents that are deciding, should I improve my quality, can, you know, have some room there. So I think in our case with artificial insemination technicians, they could easily improve job they were doing by being more careful with how they handled these semen straws. Mm-hmm. Teachers, it's a lot trickier. I think you have to think more about coupling this information with more specific information for a teacher on how they can improve, because they may not know that themselves. So it may not be asymmetric information. It may just be missing.
So between the relatively easy case of artificial insemination that we wanted to do and the much tougher market of education lie a lot of markets that are hugely important to productivity, especially in agriculture. So a farmer buys seed, buys fertilizer and pesticides, and makes decisions about which type of seed, for example, is it going to be early harvest or late harvest and so on. And then goes and buys inputs, other inputs such as implements, and hires labor and so on. So labor is relatively easy. If I hired a worker last year who worked well, then I can hire him again. And that's very observable. But with seeds, fertilizer and pesticides, there's a huge problem, not just in Pakistan, but across the developing world. And there's a lot of interest in looking at solutions for this, where you buy a seed and you sow it, but then for the next 4 or 5 months, 6 months, you can't observe quality. And so it becomes really hard to try and figure that quality out at the time of purchase. And the same is true for fertilizer and pesticides. And so a program like ours could be tried out. And there are also clearly other things such as quality labels and sort of government audits and so on. But certainly those are areas that need a lot of work because of their importance.
But even say in the example of seed and fertilizer, the only factor that can change the output is probably not just the quality of the seed or the quality of the fertilizer as such, right? So there might be many other factors that come in between as well, between the application of the seed and finally getting the
output. That's exactly what makes it so hard for a farmer to evaluate the quality, even at the end of the season, for one farmer to look at his own experience. Right. It's really hard to say this fertilizer was good or bad because there's so much else going on. But if they can pool it across the region, a lot of that variability in the information they have goes down, and so the information starts becoming clearer.
Taking a completely different example, a city like Lahore has many doctors that offer services, private doctors and so on. So one could think of something like this as a way of, you know, a portal that rates your experience of a doctor. So one question always, one could see a lot of these portals coming about, that Angie's List, this list, that list, which do some sort of rating of services of plumbers to electricians and doctors and so on. But a question that economists usually always ask is, well, if it's this good, why hasn't it happened as yet, right? So why hasn't these things come through in the Pakistani environment?
I think that's a great question.
That's a great question. That's actually what we want to actively research going forward. First of all, this is an area that we want to look at in much more detail, so we don't have all the answers. But we can give you a few thoughts on it. And the first is that you need... You need either of two things to happen. A, you have to have the service provider opt into a system such as ours in livestock, where we had the service provider go and collect phone numbers. So that aggregation happens as a result. And the other question is, so it becomes a matter of signaling high quality, right? So if I'm a service provider who is willing to opt into a program that checks my quality, then I'm signaling upfront that I'm probably a high-quality provider. Otherwise, I don't have the interest to do, the incentive to do this. On the other side of the market, you could have clients, opt into programs such as websites or apps or whatever platforms where you can start aggregating this information. And there, I think it's more than anything, I think it's a coordination problem. So, anytime a service such as this comes up, you typically have a few different companies trying out and existing at a low level until one of them snowballs into something larger. And so, you know, if you go back to look at the early history of social networks, you had MySpace and Orkut and Facebook, and it's not clear from just looking at the quality of each of these networks back then why it was Facebook that prevailed. And a lot of that could just be down to chance, but really we haven't the research yet or clarity on why it is that some services take off and others fail.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add too, I think a big part of this is just time, because we all are so used to our smartphones now that we take them for granted, but we haven't actually had them that long, and it takes a while for these markets that have been established, you know, doctors have been doing the same thing for a long time before smartphones came around, though it's also changing medicine, you know, in a lot of ways too. And so I think it's just seeing the markets respond. It takes a little bit of time, and we're trying to be at the cutting edge of that.
And you think that such services could be commercially viable? I mean, if you created a website, let's say, that did all the doctors in Lahore, the subscription, you'll charge some subscription or something for that, right, for getting that information.
Or you could go to an advertising model where your app is, you know, the service that you're providing is subsidized by ads for something that is potentially related. So a lot of, you know, a lot of ads these days are targeted. And so if you're on the in the app that rates doctors, you might get ads from pharmacies and medical companies and so on.
Not from doctors.
Well, so this is, some people are trying that model where they're allowing you to push up your ad, for example. But then that sort of, in other cases, that could potentially undermine the quality of, so if you're a rating system, you don't want people to be able to buy ratings. Because that undermines your credibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an open question too, in, even in more established markets where we have a lot of products like this in the U.S. I know some of the bigger information clearinghouses that we all have probably heard of are struggling financially because of the revenue generation challenges. So I think that's a tricky thing. And one part of what we do in our work is try to understand situations in which the benefits to society of these types of interventions could be worth an NGO or a philanthropy organization subsidizing them to help them run for some amount of time. Because it may very well be that it's hard to generate the revenue, but the people who would benefit the most are the ones who couldn't pay for a subscription fee or whatnot.
Actually, let me qualify my earlier comment on it not making sense to allow people to buy ratings. So it's easy to see a fairly standard economic model where you could actually, if you price it right, there's an equilibrium where this is a costly signal. So if I'm a new entrant and I want to be a high quality provider, I buy the rating, and that's a signal that I will provide the higher quality, and that might be sustainable.
Potentially. So it's very much like doing very expensive advertising.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Only good companies will be sustainably able to do that.
Exactly. But I haven't seen that model take off yet. So, open question whether it works in practice.
And one thing I'll add to that, and relating back to our livestock paper, with thinking about scaling up a system along these lines is, and I know this is something that rating, sort of established rating clearinghouses have to worry about, is people lying, people cheating, people giving false reports, or having, you know, their friends give them 5 stars. This is something you'd have to worry a lot more about as you scale this up and bring it into industries where there's more money on the line or more sort of established parties. And in our setting, we actually worried a lot about this. And so in the paper, we go into in a lot of details. We essentially back audited all the reports that we got from farmers and from these artificial insemination technicians to make sure they were telling the truth and not lying, and that our samples are representative of the populations we thought they were. And it turns out they were in this setting, but I think that is one of the components of any scale-up of this that could raise the cost. And I think actually nowadays with machine learning and other types of computer science innovations, we can actually drive the cost down in things like audits as well by doing a much better job predicting when we think we have a cheater, and then targeting our expensive audits to those individuals.
So actually, in Pakistan's context, I would worry less and less about this. So I'll give you an anecdote. Back in 2010, Michael Callan, who was then a graduate student, and I did an evaluation of the citizen feedback model, so Zubair Bhatti's citizen feedback model. And what we found was a lot of just to remind your listeners, the model there was that when I, as a citizen, go into a government office, the government official will take down my phone number, theoretically, and then send it to a call center, then calls me and says, how was the service? And then we aggregate this for each government office and for each official, how well they were rated by the citizens that came into the office across many different services. So this was included health and property registration and livestock and a lot of other services. This is a fairly large program. And what we found was that a lot of times the government officials would give the phone number not of the citizen that had come in, but their friend or, you know, other relative or whatever. And so that whenever the phone call was made, we had each government official giving the same number many times. And this, the Zubair's team picked up on this and put into their system a check for it. And so that reduced. But it was still a problem because SIMs was so easy to get. And that's the problem that we had also when our project started. Over time, though, we've come to the point where you have to have biometric information behind each SIM. And so it just makes it increases the difficulty of getting multiple SIMs. And so especially if we are then able to, if the government was to link such a program to a database such as NADRA's in this case, you could almost completely take that away.
In many markets, there are traditional regulators also, whether it be lawyers' markets or doctors' markets or dentists or whoever. What do you see as the role that these regulators can play? Do they also need to come into something, offer similar services for rating, and can they use these methods to create ratings?
Here's an answer. I'm not sure if I got the question right, but I mean, I think in general, there's the same problem that citizens have with asymmetric information exists between regulators and the folks they're trying to regulate. So I think pollution is a good example in Pakistan. There's a pollution regulating body, the Environmental Protection Department in Punjab, and there's laws on the books that give them the authority to act on polluters, but they literally don't have a way to measure pollution. And so if you can get them that information, they could potentially act on their regulation. So I think that's one way to think about this is maybe the regulators, so folks regulating doctors, could learn just as much from finding out there's doctors that are charging more than they're supposed to for a regular procedure or whatnot, as could the citizens.
Okay, so what are the takeaways from your work that you've done so far in terms of how we should think about governance as well as what the government should be doing in these areas?
So first of all, narrowly, we tried out a new managerial system, if you will, that was low cost and high impact. And so immediately the government can not only scale this within livestock, but across different similar markets, starting with agriculture perhaps, but going further to all sorts of markets where quality is not easy to ascertain upfront. More broadly, I think our research and research really in the last few years by the profession more generally has shown that there's a lot of scope for thinking of sort of smartphone-based monitoring or crowdsourcing monitoring in this case as another layer to capturing information about garment quality. And then in some cases, that information, if it's handed out to citizens directly, can then feed into both community monitoring and also just private citizen decisions about whether to consume the government service or not. And then also that information could feed into efforts to increase government accountability.
Have you presented this research to people in the government? So, and why hasn't it been scaled up?
We have. One problem is that, at least in Punjab, the top-level staff continues to rotate quite often. So we started thinking of this project back in... So in the 4 or 5 years that we've been thinking of the project, there have been 5 or 6 different heads of the livestock department, and it becomes really hard to go and sort of engage and build relations each time. The other thing is that it does require a bit of a logistical lift to set up this compared to simple monitoring. And I think the third thing is that we still have concerns about sort of the extent to which service providers would be incentivized to capture phone numbers in a model where they were not kept check on more aggressive, sort of less aggressively than we did. In other words, in our program, we were able to go back repeatedly to the department and check whether the phone numbers that were supposed to come in to the system were coming in or not. But in under normal functioning, we really want to reach the point where service providers start seeing the value of this themselves. And that's really stuff that we are looking to do in the near future in terms of our own research.
In this particular case, we relied on government agents to collect this initial information, including phone numbers. That's not a requirement for this type of intervention to work, and there's reasons why the government might not actually be the person you'd go to first to scale this up. I think we've actually been thinking about other more private means to do it, as well as through government. So I think you could think of either direction here.
If it's a service that is well publicized, wouldn't farmers start calling and giving information themselves? Do you still have to rely on the service provider to collect this information?
We want to make sure that we are only capturing information from people who have been provided that service by government officials. So in Saiwal, for example, only about 43% of the market was with government AI technicians, and the rest was with private AI technicians. And so we don't want people to call and confuse the issue in terms of giving us ratings of people that did not provide service, and for our data entry center to mix that up, for example, right? So we don't want them for the farmer to be reporting about their experience with a private AI technician, and for us to be putting that down under the government official's head, if you will. And so that's actually the big concern that I would have.
I mean, the other thing I'll add to, and I think this is something that is going to change and also may vary between urban and rural settings, but I think these farmers understood the value of this information and acted on it in negotiating with their AI technicians, but we have a lot of people who didn't answer the phone or who didn't want to talk to us or who wanted to talk to us once but not twice. I think, and we're finding this a lot in development, the field of development economics, I'd say these days, is that people are sort of overburdened with a lot of stuff they have to deal with in these settings, and it's a lot of work to add a lot of data to their decisions. And so sometimes the simple sort of doing it for them as much as we can, or giving this information for them in a way that's very low cost to the farmer, where we pay the cost a little more, might be beneficial. And also thinking a lot about limiting the amount of information that you're collecting and disseminating is really important. We were very careful not to give out too much information. We gave local information on just a couple of veterinarians and a little bit of information, because you could quickly sort of have folks who just stop listening. And I think this is a real challenge in a setting where they have a lot of reason to not be wanting to answer the phone 100 times a day. So,
why did you choose to just go with government providers and not from a private market?
I think for a couple of reasons. First, it was logistically just easier to go to. So the government, the 43% with the government were sort of unit reactor. You go to the government and you say, here's a project and we want to do it with all of your people. That's one. And the other was that, in a sense, when you're setting up a system like this, over time, once the system is in place and people are relying on it to make decisions, it would make sense for service providers to collect this data on their own. But up front, you have to, in a sense, force the issue. And that's much easier to do with government employees who can be mandated to collect information than private providers who can go about it with their own free will.
And also, I mean, one other simple thing, the government veterinarian or government AI technicians, and this is also similar with doctors and schools, who are much more likely to be the ones dealing with the lower income and more rural folks, and the private AIs are more likely to be dealing with larger farms and importing exotic semen and the like. So, and are the folks we care the most about in our work generally are the poorest, most rural folks.
But I mean, you would expect eventually that if this improves the quality of service in the public sector, there will be repercussions for the quality of service that is provided by the private sector as well.
Sure, absolutely. So one of our key results was that in places, or farmers where the where the service was provided, they were much more likely than controlled farmers to stay with government inseminators. And so, in a sense, we were competing away people who would then have gone to the private sector.
We didn't find that private sector AIs responded by providing any better or worse service in the same area during our study. So at least in the short sort of 9 months that we were looking at this, they didn't change their behavior as far as we could measure through our surveys.
Thank you very much, both of you, for your
pleasure.
Time.
Thanks, it's
lovely
great.
To
Thank
talk
you.
To you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Talking Ideas. Talking Ideas is brought to you by the Institute of Development and Economic Alternatives, where I work as a research fellow. Thanks for listening.